Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. I saw a few comments from people about last week's episode saying that we just came across as a little bit up ourselves when talking about YouTuber car collections.
Really?
Yeah, just a few people saying, look, you know, I think you were overly harsh and you being a bit negative. And, you know, that's not how we want to come across.
Yes, it is. Just an opinion.
That's how Tony wants to come across. But, I mean, I don't really know where I'm standing with this. Because I felt bad. I saw people send some messages saying, like, oh, I think you were a bit disrespectful and you weren't really up to date with what the YouTubers had, and you were sort of over opinionated. And I was like, well, that's kind of the point. But then also I'm like, oh, well, I hope I didn't want to offend anyone. Like, I also don't think we were particularly offensive. Like, I pretty much loved every single collection that
Yeah, and I don't think I just didn't. It wasn't for me, some of the cars. I mean,
which if you've listened to any of our episodes ever before, especially the Rate My Ride episodes, is your selling point. I mean, that's just you.
I don't like many things in general.
And you say
people, anything really.
So as I say, like I just wanted to say I'm sorry if I upset any fellow YouTubers. Not that I'm sure we did, because I know most of them, and I think they would have understood what we were doing. And I just don't think we were being offensive. So I'm sort of apologising. And also...
Not. what you're doing is, mate, you're addressing the situation. What it is you understand there may be some ill feeling and you're admitting to that. You're just addressing that. And we take it on board.
Absolutely.
He will listen more than me, but we're taking it on board.
There we go.
Thank you very much.
Yes. And essentially, we always appreciate the feedback.
Though
we read all the comments, Patreon, the messages that come through, the emails. We read all of it and we do really take it on board. And I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Tony. Thank you for taking the words out of my mind and expressing them perfectly.
Well, I might need 10 minutes. I might need to help you this week. You're a bit behind and you're still jet lagged.
I am jet lagged. If you don't know.
You're not brown.
I don't know why you're so obsessed with this.
Everyone, look, he's been on holiday for a week in a beautiful country, by the way, and I'm browner than him. I've been here in the cold. Nothing's happened.
So if you don't know, last week I went off to the Maldives for a very delayed honeymoon with my wife, Vicky. It was fantastic. We got married last year. We weren't able to take a honeymoon because of all the COVID restrictions. So we've been waiting. We finally were able to go. And yeah, what an incredible place to go.
Yeah.
Kind of the perfect place to go for a honeymoon because, well, it takes about forever to get there. And then once you're there, you just feel like you're just completely disconnected from the rest of the world.
Which is perfect and I think you're right. I think it's literally probably the perfect place to go for a honeymoon. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot to do.
No.
Apart from stare at the person you're with.
No.
So don't go if you don't like the person you're with. But no, it was fantastic. And it was baking hot. And for some reason, I think you were expecting me to walk in here looking, I don't know what, like, I think of a really tanned, like Noah Schwarzenegger, like Donald Trump. I think you expect me to come here like orange. but this is me. This is me tanned. Also, I don't really like sunbathing.
Yeah, but just, mate, if you're in a hot country, I mean, you were just, I mean, you sent me pictures half naked, not in that respect.
Hold on a second.
You had shorts and that on, and then you're still white, mate. I mean, nothing's happened to you.
But we were in this kind of like amazing oval water villa, and I had this nice day bed in the shade, and that's why I just...
Oh, he's in the shade all week.
Yeah,
I can tell.
It's not a competition of who can get more tan. It's trying to protect the longevity of my skin life. You know, I was creamed up, factor 50, sitting in the shade.
Was you really?
Loving life, yeah. There was a time in my life where I used to import sun cream from Japan.
No, yeah, not because they're whiter.
Because, well, no, yeah, because
more sensitive skin.
More sensitive skin. Yeah. So, you know, factor 75 plus is really hard to get in Europe, but they had it in Japan, so I used to buy 75 plus.
But wait a minute, but Japan's not hot, no? It's very hot.
Very hot areas, very hot parts. Yeah absolutely.
But is it not more overcast and smog and horrible?
No, like I think that. Tokyo is because of pollution, right. But they've got some amazing, amazing beach and islands and things like that.
You've been there, yeah?
Yeah. I love Japan. So yeah, shout out for Japanese sun cream. Anyway, I don't know what we've been talking about the last 5 minutes. Let's bring it back on trend.
To cars.
To cars, exactly. So whilst I was away, you put something very interesting into the group that you, I, and Paul Wallace have, which was, lads, what do we think the best car in the world is?
Yeah.
And it was a great question, and it's basically what we're going to be discussing today. Mm-hmm. So the main topic for today is just that. What is the greatest car in the world? Now, I did put this to the patrons. I've got a load of great suggestions for them. I added some criteria. I hope I haven't messed up.
No, because there is no wrong or right answer to this. Again, this is an opinion. I've based it around some parameters as well in my head.
Okay. Well, let's come back to that because we've got a bit of news to discuss before we get into it, but I wanted to tease at least the main topic. Now, usually I would reserve this chat for the F1 special podcast with Paul Wallace after the Checkered Flag. That will be coming back.
In March.
Very soon around testing. But I'm just salivating at the mouth to talk about some of the new car launches we've had. So by the time this episode goes out, more cars will have been revealed. But up until today, we've had the Haas, we had the Aston Martin, the McLaren, the Red Bull, and just now, the Alfa Tauri.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
Okay, I mean, it's basically last year's with a bit more blue.
Right. Do you think they look better, the cars?
It's amazing, isn't it, when F1 makes these big changes, how quickly the old cars look outdated.
Yeah.
So I do think the new cars look cool. I think they look a bit odd on track. I think they look very indie car on track. We've only seen some of the pictures of the Aston Martin during the filming day. With very high nose height and ride height in general. Like, they do take a little bit of getting used to, but in general, they look mega.
Yeah. It'd be interesting, I'd said it to you, it'd be interesting to see how much faster or slower they're going to be. And you made a good point, actually, where even initially, if they're not quite as quick as the last car, because less downforce, right?
Less downforce, more weight. They're massively heavier.
But you're quite right. The engineers will figure out a way, and it wouldn't surprise me. You're right, if
I think
end up being faster.
Yeah, they were expecting the cars to be 2 to 3 seconds a lap slower, I think. By the end of last year, with all the simulations, people were saying that they think the cars are going to be pretty much the same speed.
Unbelievable.
So we'll see. Yeah, the first few races, maybe they'll be a little bit slower, but for sure, I would expect them to catch up and maybe even be quicker at some tracks. But it's very exciting. Of those four that we've seen, you haven't seen AlphaTauri, have you? But Haas, Aston and Red Bull and McLaren...
Well, initially I said McLaren, but I forgot about the Aston Martin.
Very good looking.
Yeah, I do think at the moment the Aston Martin, but I do like the McLaren. The only thing I don't like about the McLaren is the little bit of blue in it.
Yeah, I agree. Why have they put that in? I agree. Get rid of the blue and just have the grey, black and the orange. There was a cut, I think.
What's all that about? Why have they done that, mate?
There'll be a sponsor, won't there? There'll be some kind of sponsor will be, I guess, will be saying bring in the blue. But I think it was 1998 or 1999, there was a team called Arrows and they were sponsored by Orange, the mobile phone network. Mm-hmm. And it was a similar orange and black livery. And it was some of the coolest liveried cars, I think, that Formula One had. And if McLaren had gone that route, it would have been stunning. So I agree, the blue's a bit off. I'm not really sure about it in general, I'm a bit hit and miss. The Aston Martin, I think, is unbelievable and is what Aston should have been as a livery from day one.
Fair enough.
Much better green and it's brought in the AMR green and all those different elements. The Haas, basically the exact same liveries last year, so bore off. And the Red Bull, we've seen nothing. I mean, apart from the additional sponsor, the livery's pretty much the same, and it was on a 2022 mock-up car. It wasn't even their real car, so...
And they've got some more money as a big sponsor, that
big
is.
Big sponsor from Oracle.
So you originally told me it was $100 million sponsor.
Per year.
And it is per year, because originally when we spoke, I thought it would be over 3 or 4 years, as are normally what they are, but it is a
$100 million per year,
which is 75 million quid, roughly.
Yeah, I mean, they've been in Formula One as sponsors for a long time, and I think Oracle sponsored Benetton when Jos Verstappen was driving there back in the mid-90s. So quite cool if Jos was driving an Oracle-sponsored car and now Max is. That's quite a cool little story. But big, big money. I mean, there's so much sort of anticipation, I think, for this new season. Lots to get excited about. But yeah, so far, I think the Aston has won the kind of looks. Just based on looks, who knows how it's going to perform.
And I'm not an expert, but for those of you who don't know what Oracle is, it is a data company, right?
Yes.
It's I don't know, great deal, but...
I think it's a rival to Amazon Web Services, something of that sort. So, you know, just compiling and...
It's not the finance company.
No. I made that joke. I was like, Oracle Car Finance? They've done well. That's a big logo placement for Oracle Car Finance.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's wait and see. Just on Aston Martin for 2 seconds, did you see that Lawrence Stroll, I guess maybe it was at that launch or in general, has come out with, I think, an excitingly punchy sort of statement about the Aston Martin road cars moving forward, essentially slating what we've been slating forever, which was the old management company's agreement to run the old Merc tech. And he's come out being like, how can we have luxury sports cars with 3-year-old Merc tech and no touch screens?
It's not 3-year-old, mate. It's 7-year-old.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I was like, go on, Lawrence. So I love him. Maybe he's been listening to the podcast. Lawrence, what's up? How's it going?
Sponsorship, please.
Yeah. But basically slating the current lineup, being like, we need new suspension, we need new goo box, we need new infotainment system. Like, it's all crap. We're gonna update it. And I love his bullishness.
Oh, if he's got it. And if he gets it, he's going to have to put some money in, by the way, because they don't make any money.
I think he's got some.
I think you're absolutely right. But if he's going to have a real go, then, at last, Aston Martin will be able to cash checks that they've been writing.
We hope so. Watch this space. I just think he's just... I'm kind of obsessed with him in a weird kind of way. I'm just bringing up this list here because... Oh, yes! The Alfa Romeo Tonale. Did you see this launch? I don't know why I say it into the Mexican
accent. Oh, wait,
accent.
Is that the little compact SUV thing?
It's a Range Rover Evoque rival.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, so it's a little baby SUV, which apparently is this growing segment. And maybe you know more about this than I do, but apparently a really booming segment. It's the kind of mini Audi Q3 Evoque. I don't know what else would be in that.
It's always been booming.
Has it?
It's the Macan.
XC40. No, it's smaller. It's one smaller. It's just below that.
Okay, fun. I mean, a Macan... in my book, is an Evoque rival.
Oh, okay. Well, no, so, fair enough. I think in my head that this Tonale is quite small, I think. What's a Q3 size-wise?
Yeah, so an Evoque would be Q5. So it's not an Evoque rival.
Okay, so it's bang on Q3 size. It's almost exactly the same dimensions.
Yeah, mind you, they're getting bigger now. So maybe an Evoque would slip down one, and maybe a Q5, thinking about it, maybe there is a little bit more room in a Q5, and Evoque isn't, maybe you got the Discovery Sport, which is a Q5 rival now. I don't know, mate.
There's too many cars, mate.
They all make so many different cars. It's unbelievable.
It's, I think it's a very good looking car, this Tonale. I don't know how to say it.
What about the tech inside?
Well, so this is the thing, right? I mean,
we don't know.
The car, it's almost like Alfa being a little bit late to the game with this. Like I like that they're like, woohoo.
It's because they're asleep. Yeah, a little bit.
And they've tried to kind of, you know, bring some modernism to this car by offering it with an NFT.
That's the drive system.
Nope.
No? What is it then?
It's like a crypto thing.
What?
Non-fungible token. NFTs, I'm not going to go into this right now because you're looking at me like if my grandfather was still alive, he'd be looking at me. Essentially, don't worry about it, but it's just like a crypto
It's kind of ridiculous. It's like a whole new fad. People are going to be going mental telling me that no, NFTs are all about. I understand, appreciate, and I'm kind of into crypto, and we've spoken about crypto a bit. We've had different partners and sponsors, and I appreciate crypto. NFTs I really struggle with as a concept.
Oh,
it's like, okay, I'm gonna get this so wrong now. Think of the very first email that was sent, right? The first email ever that was sent. How do you kind of declare ownership of that, like art? So like an original Mona Lisa or some Picasso, you know, we know where the original is. There's a value associated with it. We know who owns it. We can chase the history of it, etc. Of course, there are thousands of copies, but the original inherently is valuable. NFTs are kind of, and correct me if I'm wrong here, crypto people, setting out to do that, to give ownership over digital assets. These can be new or old, but yeah.
Oh, I've got an example. So this is basically, for an example, I might be wrong, but correct me. Is this like that Charlie bit my finger and it was bought and taken off of YouTube?
Yes.
Because it was
yes,
the original
there
art.
You go.
Right,
yes.
Okay, fine.
Yes. That's basically it. So I don't know what the NFT is to do with the Tonali. And as I say, like, I've probably got some of that wrong, and feel free to correct me in the comment section, but I'm all for crypto. NFTs. So anyway, it's got a built-in Amazon Alexa assistant, apparently. That's the big seller that they've done. And apart from that, what's it said? Tonali has all the technology you would expect in a premium SUV. A digital 12.3-inch screen plus a 10.25-inch touchscreen with a customizable home screen, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, over-the-air updates, and driver assist. I mean,
they have updated it then.
We'll see. Very good looking.
Starting to see a couple of them... MC 20.
That's what I want to ask you about next.
Did you really?
So did you see that the UK embargo got lifted on that car, and suddenly a ton of reviews came out online about it?
There's a couple of cars around now as well, oddly.
All of the journalists loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, they all went mental. I mean, every single review was like, this is the best car in the world. I still feel iffy about it. I'm not convinced it's the best looking thing ever, even though they all said that.
So I really like the look of it.
Do, even from the back?
Yes. I actually probably prefer it from the back than the front. So I really like the look. I've seen one in the flesh as well. Yeah. So I really like the look of it. I've actually seen one on the road as well.
Okay.
Seen one driving around.
Got good presence?
Yes. Like, oh my God, what's that presence? And then you realise, oh, it's the new Maserati. Okay. I think it's too much money for what it is.
Yep. 200 grand plus, once spec'd.
Are they?
Yep. Easy. I know one.
Oh, right.
I know one delivered at 214.
Right, okay. Yeah. Which probably makes sense than being on the market at like 20 or 30 over then, so.
They're 190 list.
Yeah, plus options. Mm-hmm. But as far as I knew, you couldn't put loads and loads of options on them. They were fairly well kitted.
I think so, but I assume bits like carbon and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is a complete waste of money on most money. Cars' exterior carbon, you know. Ferrari are the best at that, by the way. But I really like it. I'd love to have a go in one. Would I buy one? Not at that money, for sure. But, I mean, what is it? What rival is it? Is it a...
I think it's... Well, okay, so I know someone who owns one.
911 rival?
No. It's supposed to be a proper car. Like this, you've got to think of it as an F8 Tributo rival, as a is 570 S still being made? Yeah, Hurricane. No. Like this is a proper,
it's Artura,
fully fledged Artura. Thank you.
Yeah,
fully fledged, through and through supercar.
Right.
And every single journalist has said it's unbelievable. Mm. They all love it. So this isn't a, Maserati, lol, like we forgot about Maserati. This is supposed to be a proper bit of kit.
Yeah.
And so think of it as you say, here you go. So according to Autocar, they are saying that their rivals are F8 Tributo, the MC20 joins a vast array of mid-engined alternatives from the Audi R8 and the Emira to the Huracan, the McLaren Artura, and all the way to the Ferrari F8 Tributo. At 190 grand, it sort of travels quite a lot of ground. I actually am going to be driving one in a month or so. So I'm intrigued. I'm not that excited, weirdly. Do you know why? Because of the sound.
Is it a... It's a V6, I know. Is it hybrid cars? Are there any hybrid in it? Or is it just a 600?
It's not. It's a turbocharged V6, but it's only a 3 litre. And it's very muted.
Right.
It's very, very muted.
Right. As all modern.
Yeah, as all modern cars are, but I sort of think inside and out. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see, but it's been getting absolutely incredible reviews.
Yeah, fair enough.
Anyway, let's move on then to our main topic of the day. And I'm going to bring up our Patreon page because I say so many great patrons have put forward some pretty interesting suggestions for what is today's greatest car on earth.
The best. Not the greatest, the best. And this is very opinionated.
100%.
As in, and you can twist it however you like in terms of parameters and where you want to be. We're going to pick two or three.
Yeah, to discuss was what I was thinking. Okay. These aren't necessarily what I truly believe, because if you ask me, I'm going to say, 360 Challenge for Dali. But fundamentally, it's the ones that I would suggest, because the criteria that I set out for the patrons are current car. This is a car that you can go and buy today new.
Which is, I would have that parameter because that's what I look at.
Yeah, because so, you could see it forever going, oh, McLaren F1 or Bugatti Type 35. This is today's best car in the world. The additional criteria which I set was these points should be considered. Exterior design, interior design, driving dynamics and performance, comfort, technology, reliability, ownership and running costs, usability, brand strength and emotion. So the car that you consider should be scoring as highly in every single one of those sectors as possible.
All right. So the three that I've got in mind absolutely tick all them boxes. So we're on the same page at least.
Fine. Okay. So yeah. So look, we'll chat through what we're thinking and then we're going to review some of these patron suggestions and see if we can all come to some kind of consensus on what we think might be the best car.
The best car, yeah.
So go on. You kick things off because this was your topic that you put into the WhatsApp group. So give me suggestion number one.
992 911 Turbo S.
Okay, so we're starting with what I would say is a strong point in terms of value.
In terms of everything, mate.
In terms of, no, a strong point as in, that's a very expensive car.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Bugatti Chiron is also fantastic, but it's a very expensive car. So I would immediately mark it down for that.
But I'm talking about me, as in...
Sure.
You know, you're not... I've got a few quid, so I can have one. So you know what I mean?
So, okay. immediately, I'm marking this down for a few reasons. So yes, money. Practicality, yes. We know that the 992 or the 911 is incredibly practical. That's a four-wheel drive car, four seats, boot space is great, fantastic.
The best in its class.
But it's still, those rear seats are fairly unusable.
Not worth it.
Not like fairly unusable. Yeah. And as I say, at a, 200 grand car?
No.
What is it?
180. 170.
180 option. I know, because I spec one up online.
You'd put a lot of... Yeah, but you could probably picked a PTS green and...
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, of course. And a silly tan interior. But 170 will get you a nice spec. Okay, they're on the internet at 2 years old at 180 and that. But if you're going on list price, spec, they're about 170.
Okay, so why Turbo S and not a GT3 or just a Carrera GTS?
Because the Turbo S just is more than a GTS. It just does. It's just more. It does loads more than a GT car. A GT car is very good at doing what it does, and it is the best at doing what it does. But it doesn't do all round the stuff that a Turbo S does. You know, you can drive a Turbo S in all weathers, all the time, at speed or comfortably. A GT3 or a GT3 RS, GT3 RS especially, is awful on the road. It's terrible.
Well, yes, it can be too stiff. It can be bumpy.
It's terrible, mate.
You know, you've got to have it high up in the revs, get it singing and moving and all these different reasons. But I would argue that I would have a GT3 Touring over a Turbo S most days of the week.
In the real world, the Turbo S is the fastest car that Porsche make in the real world.
Yeah, as you say, on the road, point A to point B. And the Turbo S has always stood for that. But my argument would be, why not just get a GTS? Especially now they've got that lightweight package version. You can have it, you're saving 50 grand.
Because I'd rather a Turbo S.
But you're going to save 50 grand.
Don't care.
No, no, but we're talking about best cars in the world, and value, inherent value, has got to be part of that. I would argue that the Turbo S is a little overpriced.
Well, look at its competitors. I would argue it's very cheap.
Well, no, because I think a GTS would give you 75% of the experience of a Turbo S.
It's not 100,
but,
though, is it, mate?
No, no, but 75% of the experience, but for 30, 40 grand less, and as a best car in the world, that I think there's inherently more value. Like a fully spec'd up new GTS, it's like 130 grand, 135 grand, and that, I think, is more value, has more inherent value than a Turbo S, which is starting to be a bit more...
But when you talk about value... Okay, the initial outlay on a Turbo S is more than a 135 grand GTS. Well, there used to be 100 grand 3 years ago. I mean, if you got car for car, your money's safer in a Turbo S at the moment, for sure.
Yeah, so GTSs have always held fairly well, though.
They have held fairly well, but never normally as good as a Turbo S, especially now. So actually, yeah, your original outlay is more on a Turbo S, but actually, as we speak today, the value on the Turbo S would be, your money would be safer. So actually, if you took it for value for money, you'd lose less money in a Turbo S than you would a GTS. So I don't really know what you're saying about yourself.
No, no, this is a discussion. This is a discussion, Tony. And I agree with you. I think the Turbo S is arguably the best sports car in the world, ticking every single box. But I'm just trying to play devil's advocate.
It's a super sports car, I think, car.
Super sports car.
It's a sports car that goes like a supercar. So in that respect, it is absolute value for money. When you look at its competitors, the Bentley, $250,000, spec'd. Mm-hmm. The Roma, similar, 230, 240, spec'd. The DBS?
Yeah, I would argue, yeah.
Similar. Yeah. It's incredible value for money when you look at it like that. So,
okay.
All right.
Okay, we'll give you that one.
Thank you.
So moving on, I would like to suggest Mercedes S-Class.
Mercedes S-Class. Now, you've done this on purpose.
No, no, I know.
To wind me up.
No, 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 because I know you're going to start going, oh, no one buys them anymore and everyone's buying SUVs. And I'm like, but hold on a second, because S-Class has always represented a huge leap and bound into the future in terms of technology.
They did.
nice use of the past tense there, Tony. You know, always represented that their extreme comfort, extreme usability. Okay, they are expensive, I agree now, for a brand new one, but they could have good range of engines. You can have your hybrids, you can have your other things, I don't really know. But I just think the S-Class is just still a stalwart of the world.
Okay, fair enough. But you have picked a car completely out of your parameters for a start. I can see one...
Because I don't even know what engines it's got.
No. That as well. I mean, I'm not going to go in on you about that because I don't know either. No. but what I'm saying is that you lose an absolute bomb on one. I mean, that is not good value for money, that car. They're 120 odd grand and it'd be worth 50 after a year. I mean, that is not good. That is out, mate. I mean, you set these parameters. That is a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what.
Do you know why I chose that car?
What?
Because basically, I knew you were going to come here basically with 200 grand sports and supercars. Like, I just...
My next two aren't.
Okay, well, I still...
Actually, one of them is.
Yeah. I just saw you come.
A Huracan Performante.
And I purposely wanted to choose cars that actually are kind of more cars of the people.
Fair.
And my other two suggestions, I think, will be those.
I don't know how many people can lose 70 grand on a car in the first year.
And I just very wealthy my people. Friends and I thought, oh, S-Class, because I saw one the other day. And now you've said that, I'm like, yeah, that was a crap choice. Okay, so let's take one from the patrons before we come back to you. Keith Davidson, Porsche Cayman, hands down. Exterior design is great. Interior design is a bit dated now, but much cheaper acquisition cost than a 911.
Contradicted himself already.
Driving dynamics are better than a 911. Ooh, interesting.
Contradicted himself.
And with the front trunk, it is quite usable. Also very reliable. I find it hard to choose a GT car like a Bentley Continental GT or a Rolls Royce because the driving excitement is just not there.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you want a comfortable cruiser, I get it, but not exciting at all. I would also put the Mercedes E-Class AMG in the running. Very usable and exciting to drive. Not that exciting to look at, but it holds its own. So let's take Keith's original suggestion there, Porsche Cayman. I'm sort of with you. I think the Cayman has, ever since it kind of came into existence, represented, as we know, because most of our audience owns some variation of Cayman, a great sort of entry-level sports car, which gives you the emotion of the Porsche brand, gives you fantastic handling, will beat most of its competitors on the road.
Best in class.
Best in class, yep. For sure. Relatively good running cost, all those kind of things. I'm looking back at the sort of
the 2.5, the turbocharged engine.
He's right that the interior design is a bit dated now, but it's still functional. It's still a nice place to be. All the parts are good. I think the Cayman's a fairly good shout.
Apart from practicality, because it's only got two seats. It's practical for a sports car, and it is definitely the best in class. But the best car in the world needs to be practical for everyone.
Basically needs to tick every single box.
Every single box. So listen, it is a good shout. Because I love the Cayman, by the way, especially the GT4 and the incoming GT4 RS. But it's not that practical. It's practical for what it is, but it's not that practical for me to tick the best in the world.
Sure. Okay, so go on. What's your next suggestion then, Tony?
Lamborghini Urus.
Oh, piss off.
What? What?
I knew you were going to come in here with all
but,
these...
But give me a counter argument of why it's not.
Range Rover Vogue. The new Range Rover.
What do you mean?
The new Range Rover.
What, it's better?
Yeah.
Well, it's not, is it?
Why not?
Because it dynamically it won't be better.
Dynamically, but you mean in terms of attacking a road?
I mean everything, mate.
But
the whole you have to consider everything.
I am.
How it makes you feel. Yes. The noise.
Yes.
I mean, who wants to drive down the road? I mean, I drive one every day.
Hold on a second, Tony, because you drive a Range Rover every day. You have sat here and talked about how an electric Range Rover will be the future and it makes total sense and you waft and you cruise. And nothing quite feels like a Range Rover when you're sitting there and wafting along. And driving dynamics and performance, yes, play a part of it, but you can have an equally enjoyable... Rolls-Royce isn't about attacking an apex. But the experience of driving a Rolls Royce can be as rewarding as attacking an apex because you're not seeking it. Because, mate, you don't get into a Rolls Royce or a Range Rover to set Nürburgring lap times.
No.
You just want to waft along and cruise. And so the comfort, the stability, the lack of sound, the magic carpet ride nature is as rewarding to you as a driver as if when you get into a Urus, you want it to be fast and shouty and loud.
But the Urus does that as well.
No, but what it I didn't both. Like about the... No, see, I personally disagree. I thought the Urus was too highly strung.
No, I don't think so.
I if didn't you put think it in, could relax.
No, if you put it in the comfort mode, mate, and calm everything down, it will do everything that them... with a little bit more personality. The Range Rover I do get what you mean because I drive one every day. But if you're just going to waft, there is nothing better than a Rolls or a Range Rover, for sure. If you're just going to waft around, which is why I said a 500-mile electric Range Rover, I also said that to wind the audience up because I know.
Because you just like just, winding
just
up the audience.
Provoke people, yeah. I'm an electric car nut now, apparently, which I'm not. But as an all-round, the Urus does everything, mate. There isn't anything that Urus doesn't do. And when you're talking about value as well, by the way, because we are talking about value, there's still more than list. I mean, them Range Rovers, when they come out, they're going to be they're going to be 120 with some options, I would think. In a year's time, they'd be 80.
Fair. The thing about the Euros, though, which I think it doesn't do, it's going to be so offensive, is class. Because if you turn up anywhere in a Euros, immediately you're like, oh, yeah. Oh, look at this douchebag in his Lamborghini.
But it ain't got to be like that.
No, maybe it does. Even if it's black with silver wheels and the most pleasant spec possible, it's a Lamborghini. That's what's good about the Urus, is it's styled and it has that. It can't escape being a Lamborghini, but that's why, for me, I don't like it. It's too fair Lambo. Enough.
But I don't... me, personally, I had to have an SUV in my list because SUVs dominate the UK production now. Everyone buys SUVs. And that is the best SUV you can buy. It just is simple as that. To do everything, it is the best one. To
what about the Bentayga? The boxes.
Very good.
No, I would say Bentayga. So Range Rover was my shout, right?
Yeah.
But if we're talking about SUVs, Bentayga offers more in terms of our criteria than a Urus.
No.
Because a Bentayga can still be very, very capable on a twisty road.
It's not as though.
No, no, but it can be enough. It can be as, and it's so much more luxurious.
The best. A Bentayga isn't the best at driving down. You go to Bentayga and I go to Urus. I'll see you next week.
But its comfort,
brilliant,
everything is way better than the Urus. So as you're doing your scale of going through our criteria, well, that gets 10, that gets 9, that gets 7, that is, the Bentley will score higher across the board than a Urus because the Urus will let itself down. Within my opinion, the looks, but other things, running costs, loudness.
Running costs are the same. Are you joking?
No, Lamborghinis are more expensive.
Loads cheaper. I'll give you a really good example about that. Bentley, you got service every year. All Lamborghini Uruses now come with a 4-year service plan. So there's no service cost. We can keep going if you want.
No, but okay, fine, whatever. Interior design, usability. Bentley's way better again.
For comfort.
But also style.
We can agree to disagree about that.
Brand, heritage.
You went to school
value.
In one. See, this is why you're so biased. I went to school in a Bentley.
I wish I went to school in a Bentley. As
turbo,
we all know.
One of them turbo R things.
As we all know. My dad owned Range Rovers forever. So you know that's not true.
So you used to walk to school.
What? My dad never had any reliability issues with any of his Range Rovers.
I know.
They just got nicked.
Mine's been as good as gold as well.
So hold on a sec, says, because I'm sorry, I just don't think you can say the Urus is the best car in the world. It might be like your favorite, but it's just too flawed in my opinion. Like, I didn't think it could cruise. I found it very just highly strung, as I say. Mm. So I
think you're driving it the wrong mode, mate. No. I think it's more than comfortable cruising. And for me, I'm not saying it is the best car in the world, but I'm saying it's the best SUV in the world. Now, an SUV is one of the biggest markets in the UK, so it has got to be up there, which is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, I personally would put the new Range Rover or the Bentayga over the Urus.
Right.
Personally.
Fair.
So back to Patreon. Simon Kidd agrees with you, Tony. He's saying the 901.2 turbo. So we can't really classify that, Simon, because it's not actually
in production.
He's gone on to list literally every single. I feel like maybe Simon owns a turbo because he's literally sent me a list of like 15 points.
But the 992 is just an improvement to that. I mean,
but a big improvement.
It's a huge improvement.
I had underestimated and forgotten how much of an improvement it is.
Yeah, I
and
agree, mate.
When I drove 992 for the first time, and I've always been a little sort of slightly critical of 992 because I love the 991.2 generation.
Yeah.
I spent a year driving one around the world and I've always obsessed over them. And when I drove it for the first time, it was when I was fully in love with 991.2 and I owned it. So I was a bit like, oh, it's big, it's fat, it's too bent. Like, but having just done that trip down to Austria in the 992 Carrera, I'm like, oh my God, I want one so badly.
Yeah.
I just want one.
They're a great car.
I want a GTS. Mm. It's a bit, how long do you think it takes to order a new Porsche these days?
Oh, a year,
right?
I would have thought so,
and
yeah.
Are you a bit of a nutter to order a new GTS from factory? That's a bit unnecessary, isn't it?
Well, everyone does, mate. And that, like you said earlier on, they don't lose loads of money. I mean, the only problem is now is that cars in general are getting a little bit expensive now. I mean, you go back a generation or two on a GTS, they were 95 grand spec'd. They're now 135.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
I mean, it's a lot more car, obviously. It is a better car, but flipping hell. I mean, It's nearly, it's another 30 or 40% more.
It's a chunk of cash.
A lot, mate.
And for me in my life, so I read a really interesting interview article that came out on Pistonheads, I think, which was F-Type R versus 992 Carrera 4 GTS.
Yeah.
And they said, of course, the 911 is a better car, but the difference between the two is much smaller than it used to be in previous generations.
Yeah.
And what the F-Type offers, which I know, is the characters, the personality. The 992 is very serious. It's good because of
that. As all Porsches are.
Yeah. So, you know, I've still got a... there's a big update coming to the main channel soon about F-Types and things like that. And I sit there and after that experience in Austria, I'm like, oh, I kind of want a 992.
Have you bought a car yet, by the way?
New Daily?
Yeah.
Yeah, collecting it tomorrow.
Have you announced it?
No, that's next week.
Okay.
Chris Brown. Can't say I've driven the newer shape, but I'm going to throw the Audi R8 in there. Reliable, comfy, when you want it to be, packs a punch, but when you put your foot down. Sorry, reliable and comfy, but when you want it, it packs a punch. The sound of the V10 is unreal to me. Interior-wise, it's very good. It's simple. It's not over-engineered. The R8 holds such a cool rep. I don't know if I agree about R8. I mean, it's always represented as sort of a pretty iconic supercar, fairly accessible, theoretically accessible.
Well, it's a budget supercar if you're going to look at it in that respect. And for that reason, it is very good, but it can't be the best car. I mean, I haven't got a supercar in my list because they're good at like one or two things, and they're very good. They are the best at one or two things, but they're not the best at everything, mate. So if I had to pick a supercar and it had to be in the list, it didn't have to be the best at everything, I'd have like a Piste de Spider or an 812 GTS or something leery like
that. Yeah. I think there's, if you're going to pick a supercar, as you say, fundamentally a flawed car,
yeah,
I wouldn't pick the R8 necessarily.
No.
Don't know what I'd pick, but I wouldn't pick the R8.
Yeah.
So. Sorry, Chris. And then we've got a couple of shout-outs for Range Rovers because clearly people agree with me. Laurie Mackerel, I said Range Rover Sport, end of conversation. And Carl Jones said Range Rover is an all-day as a package. What beats it?
Well, that is absolutely true because every time I drive a Range Rover, even if I've not been in one for a while and I am driving one at the moment, you get in them and you drive them. Sport probably more than a Vogue as well. And you drive it down the road and you think, this is all the car you'd ever want and need. In our parameters, it's not the best car because it doesn't tick every single box, you know? Like, it is still a big SUV that actually, if you showed it a corner, it just does actually go straight.
So, give us your third and final suggestion for this title of best car in the world.
M5 Comp.
So, Ben Clutterbank here has agreed with you with an M5 shout.
It's
hard to disagree with you. We've been M5 and M5 Comp fans on this podcast, I mean, since it came out.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic car. Could you argue that maybe the interior is a bit dated now that it's a little bit behind on the times? It's been out for a while now, that M5. We've seen new E-Class, new E63s. We've seen new RS6s in that time. Okay, fine, you've got the M5
CS. They just don't drive like the M5, mate. I mean, they are very good, and I could have picked either one of them free. But the M5 just, for me, dynamically, just drives a little... And the RS6 was right up there as well, by the way, because that is a very, very, very good car. And arguably, if we were saying estate cars, I would say it is the best estate car. But I had to think a little bit more out the box, and if you're driving it dynamically, whether we like it or not, the M5 is just a little bit better dynamically.
So what are its weak points then? Because it must let itself down somewhere.
Well, I'm not sure, mate. I mean, maybe it's weight if you're going to be ripped, but then, like, who cares about that?
But you're really focusing on dynamics again at that point.
Again, like there isn't... Okay, the boot is still huge, but... You know, if they'd done an estate version, then, you know, it would be right up there. But there isn't... It does everything, mate. Absolutely everything.
But you're right. So maybe that's where it lets itself down, is the fact that it's a saloon. I mean, if we're really nitpicking here, we're trying to find reasons why it's not. Because I agree with you. I think it's very hard to knock it off that sort of...
Maybe the tech.
Mantle,
maybe you're right with the tech. Maybe... you know,
just in general, maybe it's a little bit behind on the sort of times now,
because it's 3 years old.
There's going to be a new one at some point.
There'll be a facelift and a new car. Yeah. And I think they have just facelifted it actually. Mm. But yeah, that in general, like, I mean, especially this last shape M5, it's really kicked on from the old car. I mean, the old car was very good. M cars are always very good, but they always like just do something for me driving wise over the other two German brands, the Merc and the Audi, just in the way it it's just a little bit more focused, and for a big car it's bloody brilliant.
I think so. The first time I ever drive an M5 comp actually was in Bulgaria, and I remember picking it up with not a huge amount of expectations, and literally in the 50 meters from when I drove out of the dealership to the set of traffic lights, I was like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, and that's for me is really the biggest criteria of any car, is how do they make you feel doing the most mundane tasks?
Yeah.
When you're doing nothing, when you're crawling in traffic or 20 miles, if the car can feel special or nice or rewarding at that point, everything else is a bonus almost. Yeah. And yeah, that car did it. And you wouldn't necessarily expect it from a big, hunking great German yeah. saloon car. But
what I also do like about BMWs, although the tech might be a little bit dated, it is very easy to use, especially compared to the Merc. And although I think the nicest place to sit is actually the Audi, it is definitely the nicest place to sit. I still think the usability tech-wise in the BMW is definitely the easiest to use.
Hands
for
down.
For sure.
Easiest to use, best looking, just yeah. you don't have to think, it's just there. Yeah. Like, I'm obsessed with the BMW tech. Yeah, okay, so look, I'm definitely going to give you that. I feel like I've got something that could rival it, but let's look back at Patreon again quickly. Daniel Clifford makes a good point, the Golf.
Yeah.
The Golf. I mean, has it strayed away slightly in its latest generations from being the ultimate people's car? Has it become a bit too expensive? Has it, the infotainment, I hear endless complaints about the infotainment system.
Yeah, it's a problem, yeah.
And some sort of slightly tacky feeling parts, interior-wise and things like that. So maybe they've lost it slightly, but you can't really discount the Golf. It is still fundamentally...
It's still the people's car, mate.
At least in Europe.
Yeah.
It's a great shout, Daniel. Nathan, pretty hard to argue against the Bentley Continental, sure, I'm with you, or the Wraith Black Badge. Sport Luxury GT is the best of all worlds. Not the best at anything, but great at everything. Very good point.
Bentley is definitely one. It's the thing I'd have with the Bentley is that dynamically, I just think, but the Roma and the Porsche will just drive a little bit better than the Bentley. Not in a straight line down the road, but dynamically.
Yeah, you're right. It will let itself down with the weight, you know. Like after four corners in the Bentley, the brakes start to scream. But the Continental was going to be on my list, but I started to sort of think that actually maybe I would discount it for, I don't really know, but you're right. The dynamic.
It's definitely up there for sure.
It's definitely 100%. It's a fantastic car. It really is. If you had to live with one car for the rest of your life, that would be looking after you fairly well. Christophe Cagnon. I think that's a French name. Sorry, Christophe, if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. I'd most likely always go for a Rolls-Royce Wraith. Another shout for the Wraith. The Wraith has been a popular suggestion from the patrons.
Yeah,
I can
like
understand
a
why. Like,
I like a Wraith.
But you know what? For me, every time Rolls-Royce lets itself down with its buttons.
Yeah.
And that sounds like a weird thing to say, but these, I've said it so many times on the main channel and here on the podcast. It's supposed to be the best of the best of the best. The ultimate in luxury and sophistication and class and engineering and everything. And again, they've nicked that BMW tech, which we say we love. So we know that works.
Yeah.
And the car drives fantastically. But then you go to sort of push the window button and it literally feels and looks like a £2.99 button from Argos.
Yeah.
It's crap.
Like an old BMW button.
Really? Yeah. From like 1992.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I don't know why they let themselves down so much with some of their switch gear.
Mm.
And it sounds like a sort of inconsequential thing, but it's not. It really makes it.
No, I agree.
As an experience, you're suddenly like, oh, this feels cheap and the car's not. And the Wraith, you're right, seems like a fantastic solution for all these things. Looks, dynamics, everything. But then you get in and you're like, oh, hold on a second. Actually, the Continental GT is better.
Yeah, you're spot on.
Yeah. Just going through a few others before I jump in with my final suggestion. Colin McFadden, in terms of the best car for most people, how about the Volvo XC40? I mean, I'm so with you.
Yeah.
I actually love the Volvo XC40.
Very good call.
Fantastic. And actually, just to follow up with the Volvo trend, Sam Wyatt with the Volvo XC60 and Mel Cann with the Volvo V60 Polestar engineered. Mm. I think Volvo's let themselves down these days with the tech, with the infotainment. It's a bit slow.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
The speakers, the sound systems aren't that great.
No.
They are cars for people and they are fantastic, but we're talking about really being the... I don't think they could rise to that mantle.
No, I agree. They're just a good, solid car for a family, but that's what they're good at. They're not good at, like, absolutely everything. We're talking about good at the pinnacle... being the best at everything.
So
there's actually not that many cars, mate. When you really dwindle it down, there's really not that many.
I spent a lot of my holiday thinking about this.
Did you really?
Which Vicky wasn't that pleased about. When I was sitting there going, oh.
I bet she was more than pleased.
Just get some time away from
yeah.
Gosh, leave me alone. Stuck on a desert island together.
Yeah.
I think I've nailed it.
Go on, mate.
I think I've nailed the brief.
Hmm?
Porsche.
Hmm.
Macan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like to narrow it. I mean, I want to narrow it down to GTS form. There's no longer the turbo, right? We just get the GTS.
Yeah.
Because, okay, so with my own criteria, exterior design, is it the most exciting ever? No, but it does look great. The newest shape, especially.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of design where people go, oh, nice, and it's a Porsche, but it's not ostentatious. It's not a Urus, where you don't stand out like the bunch. You can be discreet when you want to be, but also if you park it up on your driveway, the neighbor's going to be like, oh, look at you with a Porsche. Yep. So exterior design kick. Interior design with the update now with the touchscreen button layout from the Panamera and the Taycan and stuff like that, very good looking, I think.
Yep.
All the kind of Porsche styling, everything feels great, looks fantastic. Driving dynamics and performance, as we know, the latest GTS, really good. Macan's always been best in class.
Very good.
Comfort, absolutely there, 100%. Technology, the latest Porsche tech is fantastic. Reliability, you answer that one for me.
No. Bang on.
Bang on, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Ownership and running costs.
Yeah, okay.
They've held their money unbelievably well over
unbelievably
the years,
Macan,
especially GTS and things like that. Usability, not many situations where you can't use a Macan. And I would even go out there and say that if you inadvertently got ended up on or invited on a sports car drive, okay, not a supercar drive, you could be a solid support car and you wouldn't be that far behind in a Macan.
I'd agree.
Usability, yeah, everything.
Can I ask you a question?
Go on. Why haven't I bought one?
No, you're absolutely bang on. As in, you know, what I mean is that everything you've said is spot on. Yeah, why haven't you bought one?
Because Tony knows that's not my next daily, so I'll reveal that all to you as well. I don't think many of you will be surprised because whilst all of this is correct, for me, that makes it too predictable.
Right. But then it's not the best then. Because I completely agree with you. It's, do you know what that is? It's like the golf. It just does everything really, really well.
It's 10 out of 10 on everything, except...
there's a little bit missing.
Like emotion or...
a tiny little bit missing. And that's why it's not the best. But I completely... I think the Macan is a real, real... and actually, I'm surprised I never thought about it. Yeah. Because, like... as well, if you look at affordability as well, everyone can afford a Macan in general. You know, if you've got 50,000 or 60,000 quid to spend on a car, which in nowadays a lot of people have, it's definitely...
and it's a family car, a lot of you know, premium. Yeah, you're right.
Premium.
It's still a lot of money.
It's a huge amount of money.
But you're right. In the world of finance and car and family cars,
it's a reachable car for people. People still aspire to a Macan at some point, or they just have one anyway, because it just ticks so many boxes. But yeah, you're right. If you look at the other four or five cars that we've listed, they've all just got that little bit more about them.
But is that because you and I are overexposed to the world of cars and we now look for an nth degree, that sort of final little something to make us excited? The Macan is too generic for us because we're overexposed to them. We see them everywhere. We've experienced them in every single shape and form. So for us, it's like, oh, yeah, it's just a Macan.
Yeah.
Where actually, if we were normal people and we were currently in XC40 Volvos and thinking about, oh, let's, you know, step up a mark.
Yeah.
Is the Macan not actually, you know, as... The reason that we are faulting it is because for you and I, it's not special enough.
Well, because we've said it before, mate. We're overexposed to all this stuff, we're spoiled, you know? So when we drive a car, we really do, we're really pinicky on, because it's our job to do that, you know? In different scales of the spectrum, you know, you drive cars for media reasons and I drive cars because it's my job. So, but we're in and out of lots of different cars and they all behave differently. And then I can give you a really good example. I had a guy buy a Velar off me the other day. 2 or 3 year old Velar. He thinks it's the best car in the world because he just come out of a 6 grand Qashqai. So it's a, that's a huge jump for him, you know? And like we said, there was no real wrong or right answers. We are looking at it from a professional point of view in
given what, our experience.
Given our experience and what we've been in. And we really, really tried to home in. And actually, what you, the parameters that you set in the first place were pretty spot on. I mean, we're fairly telepathic these days, you know, because we haven't even spoke about this. No. But
I texted you last night saying, by the way, tomorrow, best car in the world.
And I said, I've already got 3 because I've been thinking about it all week. But we honestly never spoke about this. But if you look at, if you go back and look at the parameters that you set and then the 5 or 6 cars that we both picked, they all fit that criteria.
Absolutely. And as Tony said, he hit the nail on the head. You know, for every single person, the best car in the world is going to be different. You know, it's a very subjective thing.
No, and what you aspire to as well.
Subjective? Why have I got, why have I?
I don't know, mate. I mean,
it's the jet lag kicking in. Yeah. Sorry. So why am I asking you? No, but what we would therefore love to know is what you think. I say the patrons have been fantastic with a whole load of their suggestions, all trying to argue the case for each of their cars. And really, a few of them have sort of agreed with each other, but fundamentally, every single suggestion over on the Patreon page has been a bit different. So let us know in the comments below. What do you think is the best car in the world currently for sale?
Yeah.
Don't come at us with McLaren F1s, Koenigsegg.
And preferably through what you've experienced and driven as well. Don't be a 15-year-old kid and say a Zonda.
No, I disagree.
No. What I mean is you can have an opinion, but what I mean is if you're ever going to have an opinion, back it up.
At least argue give a reason.
Argue your case.
Because, hey, if you're 15 years old, you could 100% know what the best car in the world is. That's totally fine. You have to.
Absolutely,
I've driven it, but argue your case. Yeah, what you're saying is don't literally just go into the comment section and spam it with Bugatti Chiron.
Yeah.
Like, tell us why.
Why?
And then also, hopefully, because this community is the best community on the internet, we'll all start a great discussion. And what I love and what happens on the Patreon page, but also every week here on the podcast, is people discuss amongst themselves. Little conversations break out in the comment section underneath these podcasts, at least over on YouTube, even on Twitter, it spills out.
Yeah, of course.
And that's the best thing about it. So yeah, get going, get typing away, and maybe next week we'll pick up on it and see what was most upvoted.
Yeah, we don't do that very often. We should do that every now and then.
Look
and
go back at comments.
Go back in the comments and address some of them, because we do read them all.
You wanna, as I said, the ones from last week, like,
you guys are dicks.
Well, Adam, we know that. Tell us something.
Adam LZ has loads of different cars to the ones you mentioned.
I didn't even know who he was.
Oh, God, don't start again. I just salvaged our issues anyway. Well, look, I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. I think I got through it. I mean, it has been obvious that I'm jet lagged as hell.
Yeah.
But we got through it. So if you have enjoyed it, make sure to give it a thumbs up if you're watching it here on YouTube. Subscribe, turn on notifications so you don't miss future episodes. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Gravelwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. And of course, if you want to support this podcast and also speak to us, interact with us, suggest topics, etc., head over to patreon.com/behindtheglass.
And you'll see our bloopers.
See our bloopers as well. Yeah, I weren't many bloopers from this week.
Just me asleep. Which is amazing, really.
Just me asleep waiting for the espresso to kick in. Anyway, we'll catch up with you next week. Bye-bye.
See y'all.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.